War of the Worlds has been blamed for a mass panic in Siberia after locals mistook a tornado for an alien invasion. People in the region of Siberia jumped into their cars and fled their homes in panic when the freak wind arrived out of nowhere, flattening trees and destroying property. But officials from local emergency services said the destruction had been caused by a freak tornado that ripped through the area. They blamed the fear of an invasion, an alien invasion, on the recent showing of the Tom Cruise epic. So it got to them again. In a moment, our guest will be intuitive, psychic, remote viewer, Sean David Morton. Lots to talk with Sean about past predictions, future predictions, and I may have gotten him on one. Back in a moment. Sean David Morton is a natural psychic, a trained remote viewer and remote viewing instructor, an intuitive consultant, an investigative reporter, an accomplished award-winning producer, director, screenwriter for television and film. He uses his talents and abilities to predict future occurrences and trends such as earth changes, political events, stock market fluctuations. He does have an astounding hit rate and a percentage of success that's pretty high. He's been a guest on this program for the last 14 years or so, since his first appearance with Art Bell in 1991. Has it been that long now, Sean?
Absolutely. Actually, this will mark this will be my 50th appearance, I think, on the program.
50 programs?
50 appearances since March of 1991.
Good for you. Well, lots to talk about. When you're on, but I do want to point one out.
Oh, please.
Only because it's so timely.
That's fine.
You said that New York would get the 2012 Olympics and that it would be switched to Los Angeles because of an emergency situation.
Well,
I got it. Other than New York.
Isn't it weird?
It is weird.
I knew that was going to be the topic, the first thing that we were going to talk about.
Well, you should probably know everything I'm going to ask you before I ask you.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Well, again, what I'm looking at here is, and this is a very interesting aspect of the timeline. The timeline of the Olympics and the choosing of the Olympics was that I saw a great earthquake, more of a tsunami, actually, a quake that would occur in the bay here right off where I live. Actually, in the future, they call it the Hermosa quake. I've done this with a number of remote viewing classes where I ask a blind target and I talk about the next great earthquake for Los Angeles, as an example. And all the events that we get around this Los Angeles quake are a couple of interesting landmarks to this. Number one, it seems as though that there are a series of emergency events that occur in the city that is to host the Olympics, and that the Olympics, for whatever reason, because of these emergencies, cannot be held in the place where they were originally chosen for. And at the last minute, and in the last minute, what we're talking about is within 2 years or so, let's say, maybe even as short a period of time as like 18 months, the Olympics are moved to another host city. And one of the things that I saw was that Los Angeles would somehow be getting ready for an Olympics or some kind of Olympic event under a very set of rushed circumstances, that there's a very interesting and unusual aspect to the skyline of Los Angeles before this quake occurs, and that is just to the west of the main skyline of Los Angeles, there appears to me a very large tower, very, very large tower that seems to rise above the skyline itself, that has an angel on top of the tower that is holding a glowing or gleaming sword, some kind of light, actually, like a laser effect is coming out of the sword. And this is just to the west of downtown Los Angeles. And all of these things seem to be going on when there's a quake in the bay, specifically, and I think in the future they actually call it the Hermosa quake, which is something that is directly off where I live in Hermosa Beach, and that this quake actually then creates a tsunami-like wave that washes into Southern California. And the timeline that we continue to get for this quake was somewhere between the 2010-2011 timeline. However, a caveat to that would be is that now that they've chosen London for the 2012 Olympics, and they only chose London by 4 votes over Paris.
Right.
And that they believe that Los Angeles will be a lock for this. And with the amount of sports construction that's going on in L.A., for example, I believe that there's a measure up right now to spend $580 million on a complete retrofit and revamp of the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, which will then be a precursor to Los Angeles getting a professional sports team, probably the Los Angeles Stallions, probably. There's a name for you.
Football team, yeah.
The Los Angeles Stallions for the Rose Bowl. They're spending $135 million on the brand new Galen Center, which is across from USC, which will be a USC basketball stadium. They're going to do some retrofitting and some upgrading of the LA Coliseum. Of course, for the USC Trojan games there, and also with the sports arena, which is right next to the Coliseum. So the whole gist of this is that and even though I originally thought New York, because of the problems that I see happening in New York in the next couple of years, mm-hmm. that will be specifically natural catastrophe and terrorist related, that the city that would get it, obviously now London, and I try to be the first to admit that if I get something dead wrong, I come on and I talk to you about it, and obviously you're a great researcher.
But let me say this: yes, you were wrong about New York, but I got to tell you, it's pretty uncanny, because what you said was that the city, and then you mentioned New York, but that the city that got the Olympics for 2012 will have the Olympics switched because of an emergency.
Ways of terrorist attacks specifically. Yeah.
And when I saw what happened this morning in London, the first thing I thought about, knowing you were going to be on, was, okay, you got New York wrong, but you may have gotten the city that got the 2012 Olympics right. And, if this were to have happened, let's say, a week or so before the Olympics were to start, I don't think they'd be going on in London. I think they would have canceled it, don't you?
Yes.
Yep.
Well, if you look and see what happens, and specifically, there were some people out there that said, well, maybe this had something to do with the G8 conference. Well, the G8 conference is happening in Scotland, and this was the Olympics. They said specifically that the triumph of the Olympics, with people partying in Trafalgar Square, has now turned to horror. That was the headline. The triumph of the Olympics has now turned to horror. And that was one of the things that I saw specifically about moving the games. And with these 4 bombs, these 4 blasts going off within about 2 hours of each other or so, they managed to successfully shut down a train system that moves 8.6 million people per day, virtually in the blink of an eye. And everything that they've got in London, it's a weird place to have it. I mean, everything they've got there in London is very antiquated. It's very old. It's Greece is going to still be paying for the Olympics for all the security they put in there. For the next 20 years, the whole country's in hock for that. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens and how things develop and what happens with Los Angeles. I am the first to admit also that it is so difficult to put specific timelines on prophecy. And now the people are saying, well, L.A. will get the Olympics in 2016. For all I know, the great quake that hits Los Angeles, I don't think it's going to be that late, but the great quake that hits Los Angeles will be sometime before those Olympics mm-hmm. in 2016. But I'm fairly convinced that whatever's going to happen here is going to happen at least within the 2010 to 2012 time frame.
Let's go back a little bit,
yes,
Sean.
Sir.
So much to talk with you about tonight.
It's been a long time. I've missed you guys.
Well,
so.
Now you say you've been on 50 times.
Yeah.
Tell me, how did the evolution of you and Coast to Coast even start? What happened then, and how did that all get going?
Well, it started originally when, I had been working... I've done a lot of videos in the 80s. I'd owned restaurants and a couple of natural fast food places in the 80s. I was working part-time as a DJ at the same time. I was doing rock music videos and working for producers at Paramount, what have you. And, it really got started with Area 51. And, in 1990, I was asked to co-direct and co-produce a UFO documentary called UFO Contactees. And there's a fellow named Joe Randazzo, who is the executive producer, who was our on-camera host. And we put together a 13-part video series in which we collected about 600 hours of videotaped interviews. And we went everywhere. We took about 4 months or so to go to Canada, New York, Florida, South America, Medjugorje, Yugoslavia, Spain, France, Switzerland. We interviewed Billy Meyer in Switzerland, Dr. Antonio Ribeiro in Spain. We went all up and down Italy. I mean, it's single-handedly was the most comprehensive, investigative reporting on the UFO phenomenon, talking to the people that had directly had the experiences. So this was in 1990 that I did this. And then as part of this, one of the people that we interviewed at that time was Robert Lazar, who was the scientist who had defected mm-hmm. from Area 51. We interviewed him in, I guess, the early part of 1990. It was actually about February of 1990 or so when the team interviewed him. And he said, "You don't have to believe a word I say. If you want to see a flying saucer, you go out and stand by this mailbox on Highway 375, and they test on Wednesday nights, and you'll see a disc." And exactly a year later, I was out there. I took a friend of mine, Shannon Sands, who was a reporter for the Los Angeles Times, and some other buddies of mine, and there were a lot of people out there before I was. There was Noriya Hayakawa and Gary Schultz and Anthony Hilder, and there was a whole gang of people there who, once again, everybody was just kind of getting to know the area.
Yeah.
And I had an experience with a friend of mine when we had this disc, like, almost hit our car, come across the road, and we slammed the car into the side of the bank, and this thing stood on its edge, and then just bounced off into the wasteland, if you will, the Joshua Trees. Literally looked like nobody was driving it. It looked like, it looked like UFO pilot school or something, because the thing was bouncing back and forth and like smashing into stuff, and we got within a few hundred yards of this thing, and it made this weird singing sound, and it looked like your classic flying saucer head. It was like a cereal bowl with like a cupola on the top of it, and had a reddish orange glow rotating around it. And we got our faces pretty toasted by it. And so this kind of started up because we were doing this, that the story about our expeditions out there appeared on the front page of the LA Times, which was February 27th of 91. And this was then picked up by the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and the Denver Gazette. And this took Area 51 from out of being sort of a local oddity in Las Vegas to being a national story, and projected people like George Knapp and, Bob Lazar into a national spotlight. And at the same time, Art Bell was doing his program, which started out as kind of a sort of a right of center political talk show.
Sure.
Or so. And then we started doing reports from the little alien about the things that we were seeing out at Area 51 and the things we were learning and kind of our adventures. And initially it was kind of an interesting thing because I got dragged into that because my spiritual training had been that I was in India for most of, well, actually all of 1986. I was in a Buddhist monastery in Nepal. I'd made some national headlines because I'd predicted the 1989 Loma Prieta quake in San Francisco. I was all over the radio and the news there because I took people up to Mount Shasta to do prayer work to see if we could deflect the energy of the quake coming towards the area. The quake hit. My prediction was it would hit between October 15th and October 31st, that it would be centered within 60 miles of downtown San Francisco, caused great devastation, and that was my first real hit prediction. So when Art and I got together, and Art said, "Look, I love everything that you're into. I love prophecy. I love UFOs. I love religious mysteries. So anything you can give me, feed me." And I got him, all kinds of guests that have become regulars on the program.
Okay.
And it was just a great kind of symbiote relationship because Art is fantastic, continues to be fantastic at what he does. And the show just took off from there. Art began to dedicate most of his program to this type of material. And so I was coming on about every 2 to 3 months or so with new reports, either from the kind of UFO and world of the unusual. And also this played into, I later became a producer on, I was out with Linda Moulton Howe when we did the pilot episode of Sightings.
Okay. I did not know that.
Oh yeah. It was, okay. Well, that was, I helped segment produce that initial episode, the premiere of Sightings, which became the number one rated show ever to appear on the Fox network at that time.
And were you still doing remote viewing and intuitive things same time?
The remote viewing stuff I got introduced to. I mean, I've been doing, my goodness, this is kind of sounds like an odd thing to say. I was one of the pioneers of the techniques because I was originally introduced to remote viewing. I was taking some advanced placement classes. I went to Woodside High School up in Northern California in Atherton. Woodside is where I grew up. And I was taking AP classes over at Stanford. And the summer before I went to college at USC, I was taking a psychology class, and they said, the Stanford Research Institute has some experiments they're doing on some psychic powers that they call remote viewing. Would you kids like to be part of these experiments? And we did some of these experiments, kind of forgot about it. Then years later, Russell Targ, who was one of the
sure.
great, great scientists, I mean, one of the great men of the 20th and 21st century, his daughter Elizabeth and I met up and actually started dating for a couple of years or so, and we started using remote viewing to predict the stock market, to predict roulette wheels. We were making a killing in Vegas because we would go to, whenever we need money, we'd go to Vegas, we'd take our cards. And then this led to a study at Stanford University by a doctor now, James Spottiswood, whose brother is Roger Spottiswood, who's the director. He directed a couple of the James Bond films. And he did a whole study on predicting the outcome of random number generators using remote viewing. And we had about an 80%+ success rate.
Which is astounding.
With a team of remote viewers there. And we were, you know, we were... He in his report gave us 7 out of 10 predictions. I am convinced we were 8 out of 10 because there was one that were, there was a big fight over that.
70% is not bad, Sean.
Yeah, well, it's up there, and it's the idea is that I took everything I knew from the science aspect of remote viewing, which was all the brilliant things that Russell was doing and Hal Puthoff and his original viewers, which were like, you know, Pat Priest and Hella Hamid and those people who I worked with on the Stanford study, because it was myself and Hella and Elizabeth Targ and a group of other people. I'm not sure if they want to be mentioned or not, but and then took everything, because when I went to Nepal and I lived in this monastery in Nepal for about 8 months or so, everything I learned from the Dalai Lama in the northern part of India and then from the Black Hat Monastery in Nepal, and the Black Hats were very, very interested in time travel, if you will, that they were all into learning things about past lives, projecting into future lives. The monastery itself was formed on a great prophecy that the Black Hats moved out of Tibet in the 8th century because they said that in the last days that Tibet would be swallowed by the great dragon of China. And of course, my response was, yeah, but that was the 8th century. And
yeah,
they said to us, you know, time means nothing. And even though we had to wait 1,200 years for this to occur, we knew it was going to occur because the Red Chinese would possess Lhasa. And Lhasa, Tibet, is the root chakra of the world. It is the center of 5 sacred mountains where the masculine aspect of the god force, the god ray, strikes the planet. And the Red Chinese, by controlling Lhasa, feel that by controlling the root chakra, the dragon force energy, if you will, that they can control and eventually rule the rest of the world. And the Black Hats talked a great deal about there being entrances to the gates of hell, as they called it, and that they were the guardians of the gates of hell, and that these demons, if you will, that once Red China controlled Tibet, these demons would be then loosed or released upon the world, which would then lead to the end of days, with the end of days beginning with a series of massive earthquakes in the Tibet-Nepal region. And the most frightening thing that's occurred as a result of the Asian tsunami is that you have a series of earthquakes that are now marching almost in a straight line through the Bay of Bengal towards India, Bangladesh, and just in the last 6 months, and I've been saying this since I started this work, in the last 6 months or so, you have had a series of 6.0 to 6.3, between 6.0 and 6.5 quakes that have been occurring within about a 300-mile radius around Lhasa. And so for the first time in the modern age, you have a massive activation of quakes and activities in the Lhasa area, which has been a Black Hat prophecy and prediction that that once Lhasa activates, that you will have a series of quakes which will crush entire areas of the Himalayas.
And it appears to be a regular basis for these earthquakes as well, Sean.
It does. So that's how this all started. This was my combination of taking what I felt was Eastern philosophy, my basis in fundamentalist Christianity, because I studied, you know, Bible tapes for like an hour a day, like 360 days out of the year from the time I was 8 until I left to go to college. My mother was a real fanatic about going to church 6 days a week, and you know, when I wasn't in church, I was listening to my Bible tape, and I'd have to come home after sports and listen to my Bible tape, and before I could eat dinner, my mother would make me recite what my Bible tape was about before I could have food.
Moms are that way.
She was kind of crazy about it. But you know, the great thing about it is that you have to be disciplined some people dig 10,000 wells and they're only 2 feet deep and they wonder why they never strike oil. You have to be disciplined in a certain mystic philosophy that you dig down far enough to be able to get to that pool of knowledge, if you will, that then sits at the bottom of all great religions and philosophies.
Hey, Sean, let's talk about the Yellowstone Caldera when we come back. And also, I want to get your take on prophecy and prediction and see what you prefer when people would say, hey, you're the guy who predicts or you're the one with prophecy. What's the more accurate of the two? I'll be back.
Well, Hungarian-born actress and socialite Zsa Gabor has suffered a stroke and has undergone surgery in a Los Angeles hospital to remove a blockage to an artery. According to her husband, she's recovering right now, and he merely says, "We have to see." She is reportedly in her 80s. So Zsa Gabor, actress, suffering a stroke, undergoing surgery in a Los Angeles hospital. And our guest tonight is Sean David Morton. His website, DelphiAssociates.org, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Sean, prior programs, you made a prediction, something that still is active, Yellowstone's caldera, that in the middle of May 2006, deadly clouds of gas will come out of the caldera, killing herds of animals, possibly people. That could be a big problem if that happens.
Well, it's also... there are rumors that that's been happening actually for the past year.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had entire herds of elk and buffalo that have been dying that the Park Service has blamed on them eating poison lichen, which I think is one of the most ridiculous stories I've ever heard. So already I believe that there are these, that there are actually clouds of toxic gas that are being released from the caldera that pose a threat. Again, that is a much lesser scenario than others have predicted. My projections of the caldera had been that there would be sections of the caldera that would simply begin to collapse, that these releases of larger pockets of gas would actually then would then reduce the pressure on the caldera. Instead of, for example, a massive explosion of the caldera, which of course would
deadly
cow. That would cause clouds of ash and gas to then waft across the central part of the United States, destroying crops in Kansas and Nebraska, and creating acidic soil. The four horsemen of the American apocalypse, literally, would be, and the way I see that, in the four greatest dangers for the United States that we're looking at between now and say 2012, 2015 or so, within the next 10 years, are the Yellowstone caldera,
mm-hmm.
Mount Rainier in Washington, and actually the entire activation of the volcanic flumes underneath Mount Rainier, Mount Baker, Mount Adams, and actually going all the way down as far to the south in the very northern parts of California. You've got Lassen and Shasta. The San Andreas Fault, obviously, because the most expensive real estate in the world is right along that particular fault line, and the New Madrid Fault Line that runs up the through the entire Mississippi Valley, and these have always been considered the four great horsemen of the American apocalypse. Is that a series of these things all occurring within a relatively short period of time that would destroy crops, destroy businesses, destroy homes, cause mass death and destruction? And the really frightening part about this is that we are looking just within the past year or so at precursive warnings
of all of them,
of each one of these things beginning to happen. And the precursor being that we've seen some activations along the San Jacinto fault line just in the last few weeks. And I've done some scanning on each one of these. Again, obviously, always before I do the show, I do a remote viewing, and I actually have some very good friends here. William Chappell, Anna DeVito, my wife, they were students of mine from my remote viewing class, and they actually came over, and we were working on maps before the program, so hopefully at some point throughout the show we're going to be able to kind of go through a list of these things.
Okay. Do you see this deep impact with the comet, the Temple 1, as a test to see if we could hit or divert an asteroid, or do you see this, Sean, as just really a scientific endeavor to see the makeup of a comet?
Well, December 27, 2004, while the world was focused on the Indian Ocean tsunami, a few astronomers were contemplating the possibility of an even deadlier disaster, a massive asteroid striking Earth, a fifth of a mile wide, heftier than the space rock that leveled this vast swath of Siberian forest in 1908, Tunguska. And it was called Near-Earth Asteroid 2004 MN4, and it grabbed the attention of NASA scientists just before Christmas. Now, they put the chance of an April 13th, 2029 collision, it's obviously a long ways away, at 1 in 2,700. Then 2 days later, upped the odds to 1 in 165. And on the morning of the 27th, and this is obviously all the news was on the tsunami at that time. This is 2004. The astronomers then elevated their assessment again, this time to a 1 in 38 chance. Now, on the Torino scale, which measures the likelihood and potential severity of an asteroid impact, they gave the asteroid a 4, which is the single highest alert that has ever been issued for an asteroid. What's going on is that back in night, and this is the strange thing about this is that there are, and this seems like science fiction right now, but there are a group of asteroids that are headed towards Earth, and this is about the fifth major announcement that has come out by NASA, and these began in '96, '97 or so, where there's a big newscast that said October 28th, 2027 is the end of the world, and an asteroid is heading towards us, and then NASA backed off on those predictions. But if you go on to some of these sites, go on to JPL and go on to NASA and what have you, that between 2027 and 2029, you have a group of these asteroids that are coming closer to Earth. They're coming to within 0.001 parsecs of Earth.
Too close for my comfort zone.
And again, this is a 4. Now, going back now, in 1994, and this is the book that I'm working on now that should be out in the next couple of weeks, the Vajra Chronicles, back in 1994, I did a remote viewing. I figured the best way for me to take a look at history was to see if there was some way that I could use a remote viewing technique combined with a Tibetan technique that we call soul transfer that allowed me to do, instead of a past life progression, do a post life progression. A lot of the work that Raymond Moody has done and Mass Dreams of the Future, for example, I forget the name of the author off the top of my head, but taking people into post life progressions to what their next lives will be approximately 100 years from now or so. So I thought the best way to be able to predict the future was to go to the future and then see if I could somehow see a history for humanity. And one of the things that was predicted in this the Vajra Chronicles back in 1994 in this this talk or lecture or meditation that I gave was the last great wormwood star, as it's called in the Bible, or the last great comet that causes the last 7 years of real problems or devastation on the planet, hit somewhere in approximately 2028 AD, and then causes all kinds of problems until about 2034. Now, that's a way, way long ways out. That seems so much more like science fiction. But to have all of this NASA and JPL stuff now come around.
It is strange. It's also, Chet Snow, by the way.
Let me also point out, just the last point on the asteroids, every Bible code scholar and researcher now has stated very emphatically that they have seen in the Bible codes, and this is to a man, and there's vast disagreement between people that are doing Bible codes, see a specific asteroid that is coming towards Earth in 2010. Gives the year. There's very little debate on this as to when this is to occur. That the asteroid itself somehow, either by hitting the outer atmosphere or through the exact type of thing that JPL just did, blasts this asteroid into 9 larger pieces, and these pieces then strike an ecliptic, if you will, across the planet. And then I worked with a Bible code researcher out of Texas, a gentleman by the name of Joseph Noah, who wrote a fantastic book called Future Prospects of the World According to the Bible Code. And he nailed it down to 3 impacts in the United States that he felt would occur in Utah, Nevada, and Texas. Once again, how big the rocks are going to be, we don't know. And this is once again leading up into what is the difference between prophecy, Bible code prophecy, for example, and prediction.
And what's worse, Sean, getting hit by one big one or getting hit by a bunch of smaller ones?
Well, the story is told of the ancient king who, in a fit of rage, sentenced his son to death. And the son made a plea to the people, openly apologized to the king, apologized to his father, and begged for mercy. But the king could not be forsworn. And his sentence of death on his son was to hit his son with a giant rock, to crush him under a giant rock. And so because the king could not be forsworn, he actually had the rock broken into 1,000 smaller pieces, and everybody in the kingdom came and took their little pebble and hit the son with the little pebble, so that he was in fact hit by the rock but did not in fact die. and the reason I tell that story is because, again, there is there is a massive connection, again, between the evolution of the soul and the spirit, between the difference between our own redemption, our own prayer, and the grace of God, if you will, in terms of these gigantic disasters. And as I said, that's kind of the difference between prophecy and prediction.
I think it was Chet Snow who wrote that book you were talking about. And he talks about, are we facing an apocalypse or a global spiritual awakening? What are we? I mean, are we looking at the beginning of the end or the end of the beginning?
Great question. Maybe in 2012, December 21st of 2012, maybe the end of the Mayan calendar is the end of illusion. And if you really think about it, if we're living in a world, let's say, for example, where everybody is psychic, where everybody is empathic, where everybody is intuitive, where everyone is connected to that single oneness, that single mind of God, how can you kill another person when that other person is in fact you? How can you be cruel to an animal when that animal is in fact you? Is it true that what we're seeing with the illusions and the lies beginning to be peeled away and the lies becoming more and more transparent on a daily basis, is 2012, and this is the great question of the ages right now, simply the end of a world of illusion and the beginning of an age of truth? But as everybody knows that gets really drunk on 4th of July or whatever else, the next day is not that much fun. And as people begin to wake up from their hangover and begin to see the light of day and wake up and smell the coffee, so to speak, that process of recovering is not a great deal of joy. You have in essence, as the world begins to wake and you have more people turning to programs like yours and people that you have as guests on your program and some of the great minds that you have on your show, my request to everyone that is out there and everyone with the eyes to see and the ears to hear is that as more people begin to wake up from their illusion, their drunkenness, if you will, that they're going to start coming to you for answers. They're going to start asking you questions, and that you don't simply get all puffy and say, I told you so, that you understand that they've been awakening from a very, very dire dream, a nightmare, if you will. And so these two forces now, it's also very clear, too, from a study of the Great Pyramids of Giza or a study of the Great Pyramid of Chichen Itza in the Yucatan, that this new world that is coming towards us, that is beginning this year, I mean, this is the year of warning. I talked about late 2004, 2005 being the year of warning, and then after this, that tribulation, remember the word tribulation means a tribute, a tax that must be paid, in other words, to pay the piper, so to speak. And then after 2005 to 2012, as we change as spiritual and emotional beings, we should not be surprised or stunned or taken aback in any way that the earth itself is changing along with the changes within ourselves. Don't you think that makes sense?
That makes a lot of sense.
And so we're growing, we're expanding, we're evolving. Strange enough, the earth is doing the same thing. And here's the best way for me to look at it. We've gone through about a 4,000 year age of the mother, if you will, that we went through a motherly age, a Garden of Eden age, hunter-gatherer societies. Everybody was picking fruit off the trees. You know, everybody was living like Tarzan, if you will. And we've gone through another 4,000-year age of the father, if you will, that the climate began to change. The world became kind of subarctic, if you will. We began with the development of agriculture. Therefore, property had to be owned. Therefore, women were owned along with that property. Therefore, wars happened. Therefore, spoils were taken. And you have this whole militaristic kind of violent society that's all based on the ownership of property. Now, beginning right around the turn of the 20th century, as we enter into the age of Aquarius, and as we shift from the 2,000-year Piscean age into the next phase of Aquarius, which happened, the last time it happened on Earth was 26,452 years ago, last Tuesday, I think. As this shifts now, we now have what I call the aeon of the child, where we have the balance now between the masculine and the feminine. We have this child that's rising up, and if you look at civilization today, we are just now moving into puberty, if you will. You can literally see the pimples exploding in the forms of volcanoes, the changes in the body in form of earthquakes and tremors and ruptures and what have you.
Well, does this mean that's a good evolution?
Yeah, it is we're going to where we're supposed to be, and where we're supposed to be is going to be all of these lies and all these illusions are going to fall away. After this year, the most important trend in the United States and the world is going to be the formation of true spiritual communities that are going to be much more focused on a greater spiritual truth and greater good than money or economics. And with that being said, I think various collapses and crushes, crushing aspects and crushing things that are going to occur in the economic system are going to then, you know, give the boot to the butt, so to speak, to get people up and get them moving into forming these communities. But the largest trend, because I love studying trends, the next trend of the United States for the next 30 years is the progressed sun of the United States has now moved into Pisces. Just in brief, from 1945 to approximately 1974, the progressed sun in the astrological chart of the United States was in Capricorn, and you saw the United States kick into that Capricorn gear. You saw us kick into the world as a business. We rebuilt Germany. We structured Europe. We structured Asia.
Yes.
MacArthur went in and reset up Japan. He went in Korea. The world is a business. We built machines. We built great cars. We built Chevys and Mercury Comets. And
nobody could get close.
All these things, right, were happening. And so we were in Capricorn, man. We were in just building stuff. We built industries. Everything was hardcore. 1974, if you understood the trend, again, the progressed sun of the United States in 1974 moved into Aquarius, and 2 weeks later, Microsoft, the corporation of Microsoft, was formed. And what is Aquarius? The squiggly lines of Aquarius are not the water bearer. It's a form of electromagnetic energy. So from 1974 to November 2nd of 2004, where is the United States gone? Suddenly, all that industry began to fall away. We began to have collapses of our system because of OPEC and because of gas shortages. We began to see the limitations of that of the physical, if you will, the cars and the industry, what have you. And where are we at now? Everything went into the air. Everything's Aquarius. Everything went into wireless and Wi-Fi and computers and libraries and the internet, and the whole move towards computers and electromagnetic storage of information and Wi-Fi and cell phones and everything else. We're now there. The next trend, and this is the most important one that I think, is that November 2nd, the day of the election of 2004, the progressed sun of the United States, if you understand the trend, and it is so much more important to understand trends and know where the trends go, instead of specific predictions, this is going to happen next Tuesday or that's going to happen next Thursday, if you understand the trend, it allows you to make lifelong decisions, if you will, in essence, upon understanding where the wave is going to go, which gives you a much deeper essence and understanding.
Right, and you can get ready for it.
And you can get ready for it, exactly. So as the wave begins to gather, you can kind of paddle on your board and, you know, jump up and surf it into shore. The next trend from November 2nd, 2004 until approximately September, I think it ends September 17th of 2034, this next 30-year trend is going to be that as the progressed sun is in Pisces, everything that Christ represented, the whole Piscean age, if you will, what is Pisces? Pisces is water. Pisces is baptism. Pisces is tsunamis, cleansing countries by water. Pisces represents water, which means problems with water, fights over water.
Could be a drought. Yeah, droughts.
Droughts, exactly, Pisces. But it also, remember, Pisces is the greatest, what we call the feminine receptor sign in the zodiac. It has the most open heart. It is the most charitable. It is the most service oriented. It is the symbol of Christ dying on the cross for the sins of the world. It is the symbol of Christ as the laughing servant of man, of him washing the feet of his apostles. It is all about service, about grace, about charity, but also intuition, empathy, all of the things that you're talking about in your program, whether it's healing or mysteries, and Pisces is mysteries. Pisces is deep mystery schools. Pisces is bloodlines, because that relates to water as well. Da Vinci Code, bloodline of Christ, all of these things. And the formation of spiritual communities, the formation of monasteries or nunneries or groups of people that are coming together for some kind of common purpose to be able to serve each other and serve the world. And that's the trend. And when you understand that trend towards that spirituality, and you understand that the United States is very, very much, I believe, a part of prophecy, both biblical and the other prophecies that I see, why I started the whole Prophecy Research Institute to begin with, was to show that there's a body of prophecy. There's the Bible, there's Nostradamus, there's Malachi, there's Buddhism. all of these prophecies seem to be pointing towards a similar goal, and that is the evolution and perfection and ascension of man.
We'll be back in a moment to continue our dialogue with remote viewer, psychic, intuitive Sean David Morton. We'll talk again about some of those past predictions. Some of them are uncanny. And then, does he see a one-world government? Where is Osama bin Laden? We'll be back.